Hi, I'm Caitlin Blackwood, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
APP Services, the Marzi at Who1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 396. I'm Adam, and oh god, my quotes disappear. Oh my goodness, that's your lot, right? If there was a quiz today, there'd be points deducted. That is one vicious moth, and here's Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
The Willy wasn't rebellion in 193 years. There's the total renegotiation of the sheep-human relationship. Utter bloodbath.
Oh, so glad you fell over that one. Debbie Melrose.
Well, my quote is right behind yours, Kirby. But 25 miles away, there's an alpaca farm and a gift shop with a very low TripAdvisor rating. Soil.
And Mary Lang.
Ah, nice fjord.
Is that it?
It's one of my favourite words, fjord.
Fjord, yeah.
Right, there we go. That's everybody on the show this week. And everybody's moaning and grumbling already because there's not going to be any Doctor Who in... Well, there is. There's going to be one episode of Doctor Who in 2019. I don't know what they're going to do about barely. A Christmas special. We mean barely. One episode.
Yes.
Mm. On the 1st of January.
Is there going to be another one the following? There could be a year later. It could be one on the 1st of January in 2020. So, but we've had longer than a year gap in the new era of Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah,
anyway.
You're right. They will probably do one on
Yes. Well, bear in mind, the series restarted in 2015. This is 2018. That's 13 years. How many series have we had in 13 years? Waiting for an answer. How many series have we had? 11 in 13 years. That must mean somewhere on the line they've dropped 2 years, haven't they? Stop moaning about it. It happens in Doctor Who. We're going to get another series. So... Yes, here we are.
It's going to be another series with Jodie.
Yay!
Well, I would expect so. And another series with Chibnall. Oh, shut up, you manly old sod.
I think that sums him up pretty much, isn't it?
Quiet. Nonsense. Yeah, he's not the greatest writer that we got in the... He's not a bad writer. He's not the best writer through this series. We'll discuss that next time, but he's not. But he's a pretty good showrunner because he's brought in some good writers. We've had some amazing episodes this series. So stop banging Chibnall over the head. I'm sorry. It's better. It is actually better. The quality of what we're seeing on the telly. There's a couple of duffers. They need to just stop doing that. You know, when we can have a good run of really good episodes and have these ridiculously bad stories, one particular one, which there's the spidery one, you know, it doesn't make sense, really. Anyway, we're going to talk this week about a Doctor Who story. Won't get anything up on a Doctor Who story called It Takes You Away. And before we get on with that, we've had some skivers over the last few episodes, which means we have to just gloss over very quickly over the episodes that people have missed. Debbie Melrose.
Yes, I missed Kablam and the Witch Finders.
Right, go on then.
Kablam was Kablair for me. Kablair, I think, is the best way of describing that. Unfortunately, I like the way the story was going until, obviously, we addressed the issue quite a lot on the Facebook feed about, you know, the Luddite-style rebellion of the cleaner, you know, the guy you'd least expect to be the enemy. But from the beginning, I was just sat there going, it's the cleaner, it's the cleaner, it's the cleaner. And Tom was just like, what? And I was like, no, you'll see. And, yeah, unfortunately...
Oh, you just like to be right.
I do. But I also really love being surprised. And that's what I like about the episodes, like with Rosa and the partition, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, it's not really a surprise, though, is it? Because they're part of history, so know what happens.
But the writing and what they've done with the story was nice, you know, because you knew what to expect, but you also didn't know what they were going to do with it. Whereas Kablam was like, yeah, okay, here we go. And then the robots turned up. It was from the moment the robot was there, it was like, yeah, this is going to be a classic running through corridors, although riding conveyor belts was a bit of an interesting move. Very Star Wars, I thought, that one.
No, it's Monsters, Inc.
Isaac Asimov Caves of Steel.
No, it's Monsters, Inc. We already discussed this. If you listened to the show last week, Debbie, which
didn't listen. No, I haven't.
I'm sorry. If you listened to the show, then you probably pick up
more. I suppose you could go with Monsters, Inc., but the conveyor belt thing is very much Isaac Asimov.
Toy Story. No, we decided it was Toy Story, didn't we, Kirby?
Yeah.
That would be the correct answer. Let's carry on then, Debbie.
That's the blam, but Witchfinders I thought was brilliant because it was a pantomime. It was just panto. It was brilliant for that.
Historically appalling.
Isla was absolutely terrified of the mud ladies. Absolutely terrified. I never thought we'd get her as scared about a Doctor Who monster as we did about Vashti Narada. I think we have. Mm-hmm. We had a few nightmares. So, you know, it's done its job. Doctor Who, for that alone, that episode was brilliant. But Alan Cumming chewing his scenery that way was just brilliant. It was like a pantomime. That should have been like a Christmas special. Because it was like, look behind you, it's behind you. You know, that sort of thing going on throughout. And it felt like someone had sort of made a bit more of a grown-up panto, and I like that. And I also like the more we addressed the fact that if the Doctor had been a man at that point, they would have gone yes and we'll listen to you, but they ducked her instead. I did like that in that analogy. But yeah, other than that, I thought, yeah, kablam, come here. And Witchfinders was sufficiently spooky and scary that my 8-year-old is still having flashbacks.
Wow. So I'm just showing the view of Magic's backside. He's currently hiding out the corpse of my old chair, which is in bits over there before it goes up to the dump. It's been dismantled and he's hiding under it because he's been a very, very naughty boy today. He had a bath and then he peed in his nicely washed. Shut up! He peed in his nicely washed bed. Deb had just washed and dried his bed, and he decided, I'm going to pee in that. And he did, and he's in trouble.
So is that the squeaky chair that we've always picked on you about?
Yeah, it's no longer squeaky because it's no longer alive. It's been packed into the corner in several parts. Personally, I think it's a very comfy chair. But there you go.
The comfy chair?
Have you finished it?
Yes, I have.
Right, I just wanted to point out before we move on to It Takes You Away, and Mary Lang, of course, is that I had a conversation over a Christmas dinner with my photographic chums, and Emma Watts piped up with, "Oh, what's going on with that blooming rubbish Doctor Who then? That was a terrible episode the other week." I said, "Which one was that?" Then went through them, and I expected him to say, "Kabam, oh no, I quite liked that, that was quite good." And the one she was talking about, and even though she was implying it was all of them, was the Witchfinders. So it was confusing and stupid. And that's from somebody who doesn't like Doctor Who, but was watching it because there was nothing else to watch that time on a Sunday evening, which is what they're really aiming at by having it at that time slot. And that's why we've got more viewers. So there you go. So I think that's quite an interesting point, that the layman viewers find certain episodes rubbish, whereas we might find them good and vice versa. So you're talking about the Kablam one, mm-hmm. Yeah, which she liked, you didn't. Some of us actually did like it, but that's I'm not anywhere near as fussy as you. The only thing I'll actually will vouch for is that Arachnids in the UK, something like that. They weren't very good. Right then, Mrs. Mary Lang. So where were you going to go with you and the episodes that you missed? Or did we do that last week?
Yeah, we did that last week.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, we'll forget about that. Then we can talk about It Takes You Away, which begins. Hang on, let's put it full screen. That would look really good on this telly. We'll have to call it a telly. It's a computer. Now everybody can see my face going very pale because the lighting produced for this podcast. Oh, I've got a light here somewhere. What's she done with my light? My video light has disappeared. Hang on. Just waiting for the theme music. Oh, I just dropped the lid. That hurt. I put my video light here, ready for my new vlog that's coming very soon. And, oh, what a surprise. Someone has to come in here and interfere with everything in this blooming room. Oh, before we get started, there's some people come through on the Facebook feed. I'm going to pause that now. We have Laurie Nix. Before we'd even actually started the live feed, did Jeff Waddle win Strictly? Lillian Robin said hi, and John Pertwee from the grave says hello. Joshua Dyball says hi. So that's good, but I'm not sure if I can find my video, but stop laughing, isn't that funny?
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't. Where the hell's my video light gone?
It was.
I put batteries in that and everything.
It's fun and funny. There you go. No, I got your humours.
Hang on, I'm just looking for my video light. What the hell is... I'm really annoyed about that. You find a piece of kit, you put it somewhere so you can use it, and some sod... Hang on, it's not under here, is it? Some sod comes along and moves it. Oh, I found it.
You should be playing that little thing that you made with Deb the Destroyer.
Deb the Destroyer, what are you talking about? Shut up, right. Oh, there's no points to be deducted this week, is it? Yeah, of course I still could deduct points. I've just dropped the shut up, Deb, that was your fault. I lost an SD card then. They're very expensive. Thanks to you, that was your fault.
My fault, yeah.
Yes, it was your fault because I just was moaning at you and I knocked an SD... Oh, there it is, I found it. Right, you redeemed. You redeemed, I found it. There it is. Put that there. Right, okay. Moving on. Hey, look, everybody can see me. That's why they call this video. I'm going to use this my new vlog that's coming up soon, which is going to be me moaning that stuff. Vlog. Vlog, a YouTube vlog.
What's it about?
Beg your pardon?
What's it going to be about?
Me moaning that stuff. That isn't Doctor Who. Sorry about that, Kirby. I like to moan. You'll find out if indeed you watch it. It's coming very soon. I might even record it tomorrow. But I want to record it with highly sophisticated camera equipment, and I'm actually going to write a script and stuff. Shall we talk about Doctor Who?
Sure.
Right. Before we do, Laurie Nick says, no one has joked about Calgon taking you away yet. Calgon? Oh, Lillian Robin said afternoon here. And Alan T. Butcher said evening. Sorry, that was I was jumping ahead a little bit there.
Calgon is a... It's a bath salts.
I thought Calgon was something you put in your washing machine to get...
For years, how taking a bath in Calgon, bath salts takes you away.
But I thought Calgon was what you do washing machines. You put them in the washing machine. Yeah, washing Calgon machines live longer with Calgon.
Yeah, washing machine cleaner in this country is Calgon.
It's a descaler.
Well, here for decades, it's been bath salts.
Okay.
Well, somebody, Jasper Carrot once said that Durex was, in fact, a condom in Great Britain, but if you go to Australia, it's a roll of sellotape or sticky tape. So apparently, he went to what?
They would say, let Calgon take you away.
Excuse me, I was telling a joke then, Mary. Right, that is
I'm
it.
I'm sorry, I thought you were done.
It did say it sound like you were done, in all fairness.
No, it didn't, right. That's good. I'm losing stuff, not being able to deduct points. I'm going to have to do it anyway at some point, otherwise I'm going to have nothing to do with my hands. Back to the joke. Yes, anyway. Jasper Carrot, was talking about the condoms, the Durex condoms. And he said, in Britain, of course, condoms are... Now, you've made me forget what I was saying now. They're called Durex, yes, condoms called Durex. But apparently in Australia, the Durex is a roll of sellotape. So he went to Australia and asked for a roll of Durex. Never mind, moving on. I guess back to Got Doctor. You really threw me off.
Master?
What?
I just posted a YouTube video of the Calgon bath powder commercial.
Oh, Jesus. Right, moving on. The TARDIS crew are in a forest looking over, well, it's a fjord. We didn't know it at the first moment of the episode until the Doctor said about it being a fjord. And it's a very pretty scene. Again, the Doctor starts eating dirt.
Yeah, that's so funny.
We see a sheep, and she has to make sure it's a real sheep and not an alien. So she does that, in fact.
Master?
Yes?
I was thinking of Slarty Bartfast and his fjords.
Yes, yeah, the nice crinkly edges. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of Monty Python and pining for the fjords and the parrot.
Pining for fjords?
A Norwegian blue. Yeah.
Norwegian blue, yes.
Anyway, so after a bit of banter, the crew head on down. Oh, well, things gone very slow. To a sort of Amityville-style cottage, I suppose you'd call it, with the windows all rather artfully nailed up with planks of wood. It's quite artful. I mean, it's very designed rather than you'd think somebody, if they were going to put loads of wood across a window, they probably wouldn't do it in a designed way like they have done in this. Not to say I don't like it, I just, no. It did look very designed. What?
How did he, I guess he, never mind. I was thinking, how did he board it all up and then, I guess he then went inside the one door and boarded, just locked that. Yes. Never mind.
Never mind. Joshua Dybul says dishwasher cleaner. I think he's referring to Calgon. Alan T. Butcher said, is the vlog for moaning about Kirby? It will be soon, although I do plenty of moaning about Kirby on this one. And Joshua Dybul says, both bath beads, bubble baths, body mists, body washes, and body creams in the US of A. Laurie Nix, house boarded up by likes. Oh, sorry. IKEA. Yeah. IKEA. Shut up. I can read that. Give me a chance. Right, that is it. Losing the plot with you. I might have to surreptitiously. Why can you use surreptitiously? It's a wrong word. I forget it. You lot will put me right off the beaten track. Anyway, so they go into the cottage. It's a house, really, isn't it? Just looks like a cottage.
Yes.
It's a cabin.
It's a cabin in the woods. Yeah. But it's a bit spooky. I noticed on one of the ornaments on one of the shelves is a little mini windmill. That doesn't mean anything, I just noticed it. And they start poking around this place, which appears deserted, but there's sweet wrappers all over the floor.
Except they saw someone through the windows.
Yes, although,
How did she know that they were out there?
Yeah, looking out the window. Yeah.
She probably wasn't necessarily looking out at them. She was probably...
She couldn't have been looking out at them.
Oh, shut up. You know what I mean? She was probably just at the window listening because you put your ear to the window.
Okay.
And, you know, not necessarily at them, but maybe the alleged monster that was supposed to be approaching. Ian Kirk says, will the next people to use the cabin also be drawn into the solid tract? Another story with a loose end.
No, because the doctor destroyed the passageway.
Yes, I know that. But thanks for asking the question. Anyway, so they're poking around. Yeah,
you could say that the doctor mothballed the passage.
No. Oh, very good. Very good.
Debbie.
What?
Don't encourage him. Anyway, so yes?
Very good cupboard.
They open up the cupboard door, wardrobe, to find a little girl curled up in a ball. And, She's wearing sunglasses, and eventually the doctor asks if she's blind. Her name's Honor, or Hannah, as we'd call it in Great Britain. Honor.
And unlike what Ian Kirk said yesterday, I believe, she is British. She is not Norwegian.
She is British, and I'm not going to shout out for iTunes, but if you buy the series pass on iTunes, you get all these little five-minute sort of scenes... they talk about a specific scene and they go behind the scenes of that scene, and one the episode for this obviously is an interview with the actress who plays Honor, who's indeed blind and is indeed British and indeed very talented. Moving on,
those of us who don't buy those still got them because they're released on YouTube.
Okay, smarty pants, just saying. I watched all of them because I haven't watched any of them for the last 3 years. I watched all of them going back to the Capaldi era. I quite enjoyed that, actually. And anyway, this particular actress, I love the fact that Chibnall did talk about this episode and the fact they wanted to cast somebody with that particular disability playing the character with that disability. And I thought that was good because I know in other dramas that they wouldn't cast a blind person playing a blind person, but in this one they did. And I think they do need to be applauded for that. So Hannah explains that she's been left home alone by her father, who comes across initially as being a bit of that she should be phoning Childline, shall we say.
Yes.
You leave your blind daughter in a house on her own in a field.
With monsters outside, apparently. Yes. And, you just bugger off. Yeah.
Yeah. So, he'd probably be in prison. In Britain, anyway, they take her out into the woods, and that she sort of thinks there's a monster going around. And
whoever manufactured those wonderful weatherproof speakers, they must be really monster speakers.
Yeah,
Nah.
Oh, is it another joke? Oh, sorry. Laura Nick said, Hannah sounds more Norwegian than her parents. She was good, really good at the accent, wasn't she, everybody? Mm-hmm. Didn't sound anything like the Swedish chef. The Swedish chef was a character in The Muppets, but if anybody's wondering what I'm talking about. Yes, Swedish accent is similar, or sounds similar to us than the Norwegian accent. Well, to me personally. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. I'm skipping through. Oh, yes, something happens in the woods, and they all leg it. I can't remember what happened in the woods now.
Well, they hear the monster roar.
Oh, yes, they hear the monster roar, and it spooks everybody, even the Doctor, and they sort of leg it. Yeah. It's about to run a little bit of Scooby-Doo in a way, because there was four of them all legging it from a sound. Yikes! Off they ran. they were just slacking the dog. If they had canine with them at this point, that would have been quite... imagine a canine that was a bit like Scooby-Doo. It'd be quite funny, wouldn't it? Yes?
Say, if the Doctor were more typical, she'd be running towards the sound and trying to find out who the monster is.
In some ways, but she has also gone opposite. Yeah, and she has also, he and she have also run in the opposite direction. In fact, the second Doctor's catchphrase was, run! So she was just thinking, it's the unknown. It might be a monster. I'm not hanging around. We'll find out what it is later on. I think if she actually sees the monster, she'll run towards it. But if she can't see it and just hears it, then she'll run away. I think that's acceptable. No one's agreeing with me? Don't care. Right, so they go back to the house and they sort of hide out a little bit. And hang on, this is not moving as quick as I wanted to. So because I've paused it and I'm trying to play it, I'm using my iTunes video instead of the iPlayer video, which I have trouble with because it skips far too fast. Anyway, so I love the way that also that none of them are really saying, you know, that if I was in that situation, I found this little blind girl in a house on her own, I'd be sort of be saying some horrible things about her dad, really. They're not being that horrible about him. They're just assuming he's dead.
Crikey.
Beg your pardon?
I said I would be. Crikey, I'd be questioning him as a parent.
You'd be crikey.
Well, completely on your own.
They don't know he's alive yet.
No, I know, but it's...
No, but they know that he left her.
Points out in her note on the wall. Assume he's dead.
Yeah, I mean, he could have gone out in the woods and been attacked by that creature and died. We don't know.
Maybe.
I suppose I'm speaking with hindsight about how
Yeah.
Okay, Lillian Robbins says they should have noticed the sound of the monster didn't move around at all. Oh, didn't they have what they think when it's five speakers? Surround sound, isn't it? They could have done that with surround sound, couldn't they?
Made it sound. I only saw one speaker.
Yeah, Ryan.
Oh, did they have to show all of them?
Out of just the one speaker, stopped it altogether. So.
Oh, okay, maybe you're right. Yeah, like you said, Kirby, the Doctor wrote on the ceiling, and of course, if we had a quiz, which we haven't, it would say one of the answers would have been, assume her dad is dead, keep her safe, find out who else can... Oh, I can't see the rest of it. So the Doctor grabs Graham, and... Yeah, they find this mirror, don't they? Sort of a Doctor through the looking glass scenario. But it's quite a cool special effect. I quite like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Doctor and Yaz and Graham go into the unknown, leaving Ryan behind to do a bit of babysitting. And I'm thinking, actually. Yes, they sort of... I would have just moved the TARDIS into the house, so as, instead of looking after the little girl in the house, it could have gone into the TARDIS, gone to the kitchen, had probably quite a nice snack or something, really, but perhaps rather than the sweets and stuff she was eating.
But they think there's a monster out there, so...
Well, anyway,
she got Graham's sandwich, didn't she?
Oh, yes. I forgot about the sandwich.
I love that bit. Well, I've taken a carrying a sandwich.
Which bit of the sandwich did you love? Which bit of the sandwich did you love?
Wouldn't the sandwich get bad?
Well,
I suppose he makes a fresh one every
Depends
now and then.
Depends what's in it, really, doesn't
cheese
it?
Cheese and pickle, then would that go bad?
No, cheese wouldn't go bad. Pickle won't go bad. If you have ham in it, it might go bad, you know. Anyway, can we get back to Doctor Who? Anyway, so the Doctor, Yaz, and Graham are mooching around this sort of cavey sort of area and bump into Gollum, really.
My precious.
Marvellous Kevin Eldon.
Yeah, he's very, very good.
The biggest problem with this section.
What is?
Well, first of all, where did he come from? How does he know so much? How does he know about what bartering is? How did he create a light? Why did he create a light? He makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Kirby, would you like me to write the next bit? Well done! Well done. Yes. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
I love your indignance then.
So anyway, yeah, I do love him. He's really, really good. And I don't mind. This is the sort that they've entered through a mirror after flying around in a police box, which is bigger on the inside, etc., etc. They've entered through a mirror into a voidish sort of area. Anything could be there. What problem have you got?
Anything could be there, yes, but yeah. How did he...
He could have been under that same situation from however he got into there. Does it matter? No.
Yeah, he might have been created as much by the soul, something.
There was a whole world created by them, a whole universe created by them.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so, he's brilliant. His face is brilliant, even under the makeup. I was trying to work out where I've seen him before, because he's got a certain smile that is sort of, I think, I've seen that face somewhere else. And I looked him up on Google, and I didn't recognise him from anywhere. But I will say he was very good, yes. You were going to say something, Mrs. M.
Yeah, he's in a lot of my favourite comedy stuff. So yeah, like he was in Tomorrow and Julie This Morning with Richard Not Julie was one of the first things I ever saw him in. He was hysterical in that, absolutely wonderful. And then he's done quite a lot of radio work, radio comedies.
I wouldn't really recognise his face from a radio comedy though, would I, Deb?
No, I'm just saying that he is quite prolific, but he's quite off the wall, if you see what I mean. So it's sort of stuff that isn't always mainstream, but has cult following, that sort of thing.
Well, Joshua Dybul says Dead Set and Jam. Is that what's in Graham's sandwich?
No, that's what that's what Kevin Eldon's been in.
Okay, right. So meanwhile, obviously Ryan is bonding with Hannah, and she's not stupid. She knows the doctor's written something on the ceiling. And she starts sort of panicking, and Ryan has to sort of calm her down while the doctor, Graham and Yaz... Yeah, the doctor's actually done the old labyrinth thing and put a bit of string around so they don't get lost. Yes, we knew that wasn't going to stay... What?
I brought this up when I was on the Earth Station Who podcast the other night.
Oh, dear.
We're talking about this. It reminded me of the scene in the labyrinth in the second Doctor story of the Mind Robber.
Okay. Right. We could have actually saved some time here. All you'd had to do is record what you did on the other podcast, send it to me. You could have had a night off, and I could have just taken out about three or four seconds of what you said on that show and just dubbed it in.
It's been posted for several days.
Well. Anyway, Joshua Dybul says, Dead Set was the Big Brother horror, and Jam was a really dark comedy series from the 1990s. Kevin Eldon was famously in both, as well as much more. And Joshua Dybul says, and the Game of Thrones.
Yep, he's in Thrones.
Mm. Everybody is.
I'm bloody not.
I'm not.
Yeah, thank you, Debbie.
If they're not in Game of Thrones, they're in Doctor Who, and sometimes they're in both.
You just said everybody's in Game of Thrones. I haven't seen Jim Parsons in Game of Thrones. I haven't seen Kaley Cuoco. I beg your pardon?
British actors,
okay. Anyway, the Doctor, meanwhile, with this alien chappy, whose name I forget for the moment.
He likes the tubular.
Yes, he has this orb.
Rabbits.
It's this glowing orb. Which attracts a moth to it. Very big moth. But it turns out these moths are a bit like Vashnarada. They love flesh. And so he carries this light around so they don't eat him. They just get attracted to the light. Quite like that scenario. I thought it was quite good to turn a moth into something quite grisly and scary. But at some point the light's going to go out. So meanwhile, back at the house, Ryan... goes out because the sound appears again. Don't know how this sound is, suddenly. It's got it on a loop, isn't it? It'll come out and roar for a little bit, then go off. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Mm. Anyway, yes, he goes. Sir. Yes.
I saw somewhere that, or heard somewhere, that that monster roar is straight off of the 70s BBC Radiophonic Workshop sound effects.
I should hope so, too. Do you know, I found that album, the vinyl version of that album, somewhere the other day.
Oh, I have that, yeah.
One of the sound effects albums. But I did I found it in a shop that was selling vinyl. But I can't think where I saw that now.
That shop?
No, it's not in Cowes. It was somewhere else on the island. I'm annoyed by now. Unless I dreamt it. I don't think I did that. Anyway, Ryan goes out and disconnects the speaker and saving the day in regards to, any more scary sounds for Hannah. Yes.
Did anyone notice that swing set that with the single swing looks very much like the one that was in Amelia's yard?
No.
I wonder if it's the same one.
The swing. Huh? Why would it be the same one in Norway?
Well, they do have trucks. They can carry props around it. I think it's unlikely, and I really don't think it matters. So. Yeah, so at some point, the monster grabs Graham around the throat and then gets a bit spooked out because loads of moths start appearing.
Ribbons. His name is Ribbons of the Seven Stomachs.
Thank you, Kirby. Smarty pants. moving on. Yeah, so then the light goes out and all these vicious moths are sort of in there looking for food. The doctor tells everybody to keep very, very still. Otherwise they're going to end up in the meal. But then, of course, they run for it and they find a portal and they think they've arrived back in the house. But of course,
are we going to gloss over the fact that Ribbons ends up with a moth crawling out of him? Because that was sufficiently spooky.
Was that after he got killed?
Yeah.
I like that scene. That was really, really good. Yes, that was spooky. I think the fact that he got killed and eaten to a corpse or whatever, I quite like that. But yes, I'm going to gloss over that because where I was whizzing through, I missed it. Okay.
Fair enough.
But it was good. I like that bit. And they, of course, added to the tension of the scene that he's just got killed. All these moths are flying towards them and they managed to get through a portal. They thought it was, like I said, the portal they'd come out originally and then very quickly find it's... a house, and Hannah, meanwhile, goes in through the mirror and finds what's left of the tether, which had snapped earlier on. And then the doctor meets Hannah's dad, threatens her with a rolling pin. Yes?
I like how they did the reverse image on everything in the...
Yes, universe.
No, was that it? I thought you were going to carry on. Unusually,
yeah, the T-shirt and everything. Yeah,
the T-shirt. The way the doctor's is opposite.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
They simply flip the image, but
yeah, but still good though, mate.
Yes.
Mm. What does his shirt say?
It's supposed to say laser, isn't it? Something like that.
No, it says.
It says up.
When I can see it. It says, Slayer?
It looks like it says Slaver. Is that what it says?
Slayer. It's a Slayer t-shirt.
Is that a band? Oh, hang on. Dog being sick.
It's
hang
a
on.
Band, yes.
What are you doing?
Because the first letter is so blended into the second letter that I couldn't tell is it Slaver or is it Zalaver?
Is Slayer supposed to be a band of some variety?
Yes.
Yeah. British metal band, yes.
Is it a real band?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chemical warfare. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Anyway, so they meet obviously Hannah's dead mum as well.
My opinion of the dad went very, very downhill.
Yeah, so she basically says, I'm going to stay with mum. I got the blind daughter. I'm going to stay with mum. And then, of course, out in the garden is.
Oh, that was heartbreaking.
It was Grace. And, of course, the fact that Hannah's mum's there, you know, that.
Heartbreaking, wasn't it, when she turned up? Yeah. Oh.
We were sort of surmising that because they were saying, how would the aliens know what Grace is like, etc.? Well, lots of aliens can read people's minds and stuff, and this happened in all sorts of different... there was a particularly good episode of Voyager that I watched a few months ago, in which there was an alien that invaded Janeway's mind, and to try and get her... she was unconscious, and they were trying to get her soul or something, her consciousness... convince her that she'd actually died and she was going to heaven and her father had come to see her, but they'd actually sort of probed her mind, knew what her father looked like, and they, all they had to do is get her to agree to step into this realm, and then she'd be dead. But she was, her strength of character meant that she just would not believe it, and she didn't, and she survived. Obviously, it was a really, really good episode, but it reminded me of that for me, that I thought they were going to go down that road with it, that because obviously it wasn't Grace, but they were just going to try and convince Graham that it was, and you know. But anyway, I'm moving back to Doctor Who. Yeah, so Hannah is sort of staggering through these catacombs, and then fortunately Ryan follows her in there.
Podcast.
Ryan follows her in and sort of helps her, finds one of those nice orange orbs, but doesn't know what it's for.
There's only one orb.
Oh, yeah, that's probably what Rip has dropped.
Yeah, but it was switched off, wasn't it? How did it end up back on again?
No, it wasn't switched off.
It did, because it went off, and then all the moths left that weren't attracted to it, and they all chased after the Doctor, Graham, and Yaz. So it wasn't on. That's why they left. That's why they were in danger. And then when Ryan came back in, there was a glowing one, so that all the moths went to the light instead of them. Yeah. Just saying.
I don't remember it that way.
Well, I'm right, aren't I, Debbie?
I don't remember it either.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Well, it did. I can't remember how it went out. That's what I'm saying. It went out. That's why it killed. They were worried about the light going out. That's why it killed Ribbons and chased after the others, because it wasn't on. Once the light's on, the moths will just go get attracted to that light. That's the whole point. Ah, you lot. I don't know why I bother. I wonder if there's any other podcasters, crews that have got anybody available that actually watches the episodes properly. Anyway, so yes, beautifully acted scenes, these, with Bradley Walsh and the woman who plays Grace.
It was lovely, but so...
It was supposed to be heart-wrenching.
When we realised it was her, we were literally shouting at the screen, please don't do this to Graham! Don't do this to Graham! We were just so upset for him.
It lent to a lot of angst. And it was incredibly... That's why I said that I might have posted that Bradley Walsh deserves some sort of award for several performances in Doctor Who this series, not least this one. Anyway, so the Doctor has sort of realised what's going on here, and she's not starting to panic now, because she thinks, hang on, I've got to convince Graham to all these people not to stay here, because things are going to start getting a bit unstable and stuff. And I think she, after talking to herself mainly, but Yaz is in the room, she starts sussing out where or what is actually happening. But she's also panicking, because she's got to, you know, obviously Graham's talking to his love, and or thinks he's his love, and you know, it's a very difficult situation. She's got to be cruel to be kind with Graham. Joshua Dyble says the solid tract was just lonely. It's only motive, as far as I could tell, was for company, by emulating a loved one or whatever. Yes, makes sense. Anyway, so there's a lot of Graham sort of he knows it's not her, but he wants proof that it is. And Deb and Izzy were sort of saying, oh, how will she know? Well, she reads his mind. That's how she knows. And then that's right. So then the Doctor is losing, the portal is closing between, you know, the sort of reversey mirror world and the thing, or whatever that sort of realm is, the cave sort of realm. So she uses sonic screwdriver to open it up, but unfortunately that becomes less and less possible as time goes on, because things are starting to collapse. So she has to convince the solid tract creations to reject people. So they start doing that sort of pushy thing, and they start flying back. Where they go? Well, they end up in the cave, or just back in the normal universe? I can't remember.
No, they end up in the cave.
Yeah.
Way the young girl acts at this point when she realises it's not her mum.
You do like it.
That was a really good bit of acting from her. You know, you're not my mum. You're not my mum.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, great accent there, Debbie. You get a point for that.
Which plays on that thing about people who are deprived of one sense, you know, develop other senses. and stuff.
It does. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Everybody, you know the smell of your favourite people and, the arms that go round you. You know that. And, when you're deprived of the sight, to be able to know someone by their every other sense is just, it's overwhelming, isn't it? And then when you know that someone's right but not right, I mean, that must have been, horrible experience. Poor Grace and Gray.
Lillian Robbins says, Ribbon said his globe was the only light there, so it must have been turned back on. The solid tract wasn't afraid of croaking. Hey, we haven't got there yet, Lillian. so as I say, the doctor's trying to persuade.
Who said that? What are you talking about?
Lillian.
He's reading the feed.
Oh, who said it?
Lillian.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Kirby was listening to that bit, listeners. So the doctor persuades all of them eventually to head back, and then after all that, because she's going to be a martyr, she's the only one left, and then she's in a sort of very white, glowy place. And it was disappointing, not so much that it was a frog on a chair, that the frog looked like one of those 1970s Doctor Who monsters. Now, when I looked at that, I think Debbie and Izzy sort of went, and I went, oh, brilliant. They've sort of tried to pay homage to the Doctor Who monsters of the 1970s, namely the dinosaurs in the Invasion of the Dinosaurs. But I didn't mind it at all. And I knew people were going to moan about it. And I did think it was Kermit the Frog. I think they might as well just have a Muppet there doing it.
It's not easy being green.
Yeah. Well, you remember the little song with the Kermit's little nephew? I can't remember what that song was now. I'm surprised somebody hadn't actually taken a sample of this and made it so it's that little Kermit's little nephew singing the song that was a hit.
Halfway up the stairs, didn't he sing?
I don't know.
Yeah, the Christopher Robin poem. Oh, was it? He sang it, yeah. Yeah, okay. Is it something like that?
I might have been, I can't remember. Anyway, yes, so the frog is all this sort of...
I'm on it.
What I did like about it is the way that they'd shot it, so the eyes were perfectly in focus and everything else was out of focus. Obviously, this is... I think some of it was computer-generated, some of it was animatronic. It wasn't that
bad. I wasn't quite sure.
It wasn't.
Yes, it is halfway down the stairs.
The only thing that disappointed me, I didn't mind it. I knew that this had been an absolutely bang-on episode right up to this point, and this was the only thing that was a bit didn't quite make it for me. It wasn't bad enough to make it a bad episode. It was just, if they just sort of made something a bit more right for it, it would have kept it going, and. It just detracted slightly. I didn't want anything to detract from this story, and that was the only thing for me that detracted from it. They could have made it any other sort of small alien, really, couldn't they? Frog or whatever, I don't know, but it was a shame.
I have been searching. I thought I saw where they had designed the solid track not to be a frog originally, but something much scarier, and there's a publicity photo of the crew standing with this big scary thing in the passageways.
I don't know, but it's a shame. I even if they're going to do it as a frog or amphibious type creature, just make it a bit more
better.
Better, yeah. It's a shame.
I've just sent a link from YouTube with halfway down the stairs.
Oh well, thank you very much, Kirby.
Oh, by the way, I put the Slayer logo out for Mary.
Oh, wonderful. Anyway, the other thing it reminded me of is the way that in Planet of Spiders they had the spider sat on the chair. It was a little bit like that. It was very fixed to the chair. Oh. You know.
Okay.
It was what it was, and that was it. So the doctor basically persuades the creature to let her go because even she can't keep the universe together. It's all going to fall apart. And while it's all sort of still going a bit earthquakey, they just about make it back into the real house. And with Dad, who has got a lot to answer for, and he's hugging Hannah, and Hannah doesn't look overly convinced. She hasn't got much choice in the fact that she's being hugged. She's got both two arms around her. But yeah, Dad, very naughty Daddy.
I know they justify it by saying, oh, he's been sick, he's been poorly, and obviously he's grieving. But yeah. I think they gloss over, the doctor glosses over that aspect a bit.
I wouldn't leave her with him.
No.
But there you go. They did. And, of course, she gives Ryan a hug. She was very attached to Ryan. Poor old Graham. And that was a beautiful scene with Graham and Ryan looking over the fjord, and Ryan comes up and calls him granddad. Tear in the
Is
eye moment there.
Pining for the fjords?
No, it's pining for Grace. And Ryan could see that. And Ryan...
pining at the fjords.
Ryan goes up to him and calls him granddad. And,
I was so sorry.
That was beautiful.
Knew it was going to happen sometime.
Yeah, no, I think it was the right moment as well. It was, yeah. And that was at the end of the episode. This episode was absolutely fantastic. It was, I think I called it outstanding when I wrote on a comment straight after it finished. I stand by that. For me, it's my favourite story episode of the series. Absolutely brilliant. I'd like to have a few more superlatives. All I said while I was talking was the frog was the only thing that slightly detracted, but it wasn't enough. It was absolutely superb. Right then, Kirby, what did you think of it?
We're going to disagree. Interesting.
Bad, Kirby. Where's my noise? Say something.
I was disappointed. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Hang on. You said you were disappointed that it was beautiful. Right, definitely. There we go. Yep.
No. It was absolutely beautiful, but the middle segment, the whole business with ribbons, just was complete distraction. He had no reason to be there. It took away from the story, and also that dad is a bad dad.
He's a bad dad. Oh, sorry. Hang on. You get one of these for that one.
This was not the worst story of the season. Arachnids.
Correct.
This was an average story. There were some that were worse. It's average.
Thank you very much, Kirby. Debbie, what did you think?
Me?
And you would, by the way, you would have known that if you listened to the Earth Station Who podcast.
Oh, the Earth Station Who podcast. Debbie.
I'm just terrified that we're not allowed to have our own opinion.
Who's stopping anybody having an opinion? If it's wrong, that's fine. Carry on.
It was sumptuous. It was sumptuous. The colours are amazing.
Sorry, that was an accident. Sorry. Carry on.
Thanks. Grace and Graham wanting to go. I totally empathise. I'd love to go. I asked Laurie Nix if she'd like to meet me there one day, and I stand by that. That'd be great.
Meet you where? In the fjords?
The fjords, yeah. Pining for the fjords. Fjord is one of my all-time favourite words. There's a few of them. Doge is another one. I love the sound of the words. But I'm distracting myself, really. Yeah, I love the whole cabin in the woods type of horror anyway. And as soon as we saw the cabin with all the boards on, I was like, yeah, here we go. And, I agree that the bit with ribbons in the middle was a bit of a almost standalone chapter, if you see what I mean. But I thought overall it was really good, and the main thing, the strongest point, and one of the strongest points this whole series is Graham.
When everybody was moaning about Bradley Walsh getting cast as a companion, I predicted he would be superb.
This whole season, having now watched the last one as well, he has been my favourite and absolute best. And this episode, what they did to him by bringing Grace back like that, I was in bits for him. And purely because of his story arc in this episode, it is a good episode. But it's not one of the top ones of the series, but it's definitely up there. Definitely.
Yes, thank you, Debbie. I don't disagree with you there. I think that was fairly positive comments. But I will say, you talk about your favourite words. My favourite words are the words that Americans can't say properly, starting with congratulations. Americans cannot say the word congratulations properly. It's a very good word, that. They can only say it as congratulations. Yes. So the word is spelt congratulations. Yes. There's no G.
I say it right.
There's no two. There's one G, not two G. Not congratulations. They can't say it. Mirror. Mirror. It's not a mirror. It's a mirror. All right, that's another one.
I didn't realise it was going to open a whole can of worms, American.
Aluminium. Aluminium.
Congratulations, right. Properly.
Aluminium.
It has an R at the end. It doesn't have an A at the end. You don't say mirror.
I know plenty of Americans that say Worcestershire.
Or a mirror.
I still want to know where the TH is in the middle of lieutenant, where you guys say lieutenant. I want to know where the TH came.
I haven't got to that point.
It's an F.
We'll have to look down who invented the word. Right. Aluminium.
I've always called it lieutenant, and I get...
Shut up, Debbie.
Trouble.
Debbie, aluminium. A-L-U-M-I-N-U... Oh, I can't even say it. A-L-U-M-I-N-I-U-M. Aluminium.
Aluminium.
Not aluminum.
It's taken the smeg out of the Americans not being
murder. All right, that's no murder with that. It hasn't got an A at the end. Well done, Mary.
It doesn't have an A at the end.
But what happened to the U? Murder. Murder. Mm-hmm. It's the way Scottish. In fact, the Scots say it probably doesn't. Murder. How about this one? Bernard. Not Bernard. Bernard.
Bernard and the Genie.
This is one of the best ones, and Andy Nunny will like this one.
That was a great, great little film, by the way. I loved it.
Repeat.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Yeah. Another word, this is one for Andy Nunny. Birmingham. Not Birmingham. Birmingham. London.
I know a lot of people who are associated with Con GT. Mm. Not Con GT, Con Casterbrus, Con GT's dad.
Yeah.
Con Casterbrus in Alabama, who know about Birmingham. Okay. Alabama.
Whatever. Right. I'm pretty sure Birmingham, Alabama is named after Birmingham in somewhere in Britain.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so it's Birmingham. Right then. This is one.
It's a big iron producing area.
Okay. Right. Stop interrupting.
They have a giant statue of Vulcan.
Right.
In America, the word aluminum is not spelled with that I.
That's because whoever wrote it down wrote it.
U-M, so it's pronounced aluminum.
Well, that's because they wrote it down wrong. Here's another one. London. Sorry, the word London. In America, London, England. They've actually attached an extra word to it, and it's just London, not London, England. Well, where are you going on holiday? London, England.
There's London, Missouri. There's London in a lot of places.
I've never heard London, Missouri. No, London. It's still London.
You know, Birmingham, England. You know,
Right. I'm off to see the Queen and the Buckingham Palace in London, England. It's London. Right. I'm sure there's not a Buckingham Palace in London. The other places you mentioned. Anyway, Paris. Not Paris, France. Paris, France. It's Paris.
See, there are Parises all over the United States.
All right.
Exactly.
There's another one. Football. Not soccer. Soccer. Even soccer's wrong because it's S-O-C-K-E-R. Soccer.
Yeah.
Soccer.
It comes from the word association.
Association. We don't say soccer. Yeah. We say soccer.
How about this one? Burgled. Right. Burglarized. It's burgled.
We just don't ever say that word.
Identity. It's a good one. It's a good one. Identity. Identity.
You have a whole list of these.
Yes, I've got a whole list. Identity. That's the word, yes.
We'll talk to you in a minute.
Be quiet. No. I'm on a subject. I'm on a roll. Right. Identity. Yes. Identity. That's how
it's identity.
No, it isn't. Identity. That's how I've heard Americans do it on all sorts of films. Identity.
Yeah, but not all Americans have the same accent.
Don't rise to.
Here we go. Look, got another one. Got another one.
There's lazy speech everywhere,
too. I've got another one. Records. Right. Where is records?
You're just making fun of different accents.
I am not. Yeah. I object. I've spent time compiling this list. Shush. Right, how about this one? Excuse me.
I apologise profusely.
How about this one? Laboratory. Shush. Laboratory. Laboratory.
We say laboratory.
Yeah. The word is L-A-B-O-R-A-T-O-R-Y. Laboratory.
Laboratory. Laboratory. Just a difference of accent. That's all.
How about this one? This is a good one. You like this one? Squirrel.
Squirrel? Who says squirrel?
That's what they are. They're squirrels.
They're squirrels.
Not everyone pronounces, not every American pronounces these things the way that you think we
do. I know, but I'm having fun.
That. I just said that.
I'm having fun. Be quiet. Right.
You say. Well,
how about this one? This, I've only got many left now. I've got, I spent time in my lunch break doing these things. Right. Here's another one. Mischievous. Mischievous.
Yes, not mischievous. Mischievous. Spelled. No, there are no additional letters. It's just mischievous.
Okay.
You're adding letters to it.
Okay. Anyway, a dentist. This is a good one. You like this one. Debbie liked the ones. This one particularly. Dentist. Dennis. Yeah.
No, it's dentist.
Oh, we say dentist.
That's just great fun.
That's just lazy speech is all that is.
How about this one? Duty. Duty.
Who even
knows
anybody that says duty?
No. You just did it then. Oh, yeah, there's two more, right. One, Stavros.
Where are you hearing some of this stuff?
I'm watching American films. Stavros. Stavros. Yep.
What?
One more
what
less.
What?
Stavros.
Let's just agree to disagree and get to know.
What is that? What are you talking
Stavros.
About?
Stavros. That's a Greekish sort of name, Stavros. Stavros. Like Davros. Davros, some Americans call Davros.
I want to hear what Mary thinks.
One more.
He's having too much fun.
I'm having too much. Exactly. My show. Norfolk. 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 There we go. That was the last one.
Well, unfortunately, the people who live in Norfolk, that's how they pronounce it.
No, it's Norfolk.
Yeah.
Norfolk.
No, okay. Can I tell you one that absolutely makes me crack up?
Go on, then.
Outside of Lexington, Kentucky, there is a town named after a place in France.
Yeah.
Versailles, which they call Versailles.
Yeah. Oh, it is called Versailles.
Yes.
They pronounce it Versailles.
Don't worry, the French pronounce all sorts of things wrong, but never mind.
Right. A town in Ohio that is named Russa. Which is spelled the same as Russia, but they pronounce it Russa.
Wow. Good fun, this. I told you it would be good fun, didn't I? Right then.
A few years ago, I had to go on business to Lexington, and we were using Google Maps or something. And I was, it was so funny to be riding with people who pronounced the town Versailles, and the map program is saying Versailles.
Yeah. Well, again, my sat-nav does that. It says some really stupid words for things that are fairly obvious. Once it happens, I'll write it down because it's like easy to pronounce things in everyday life, and it says it completely wrong. Very confusing. Or if you didn't come, obviously you didn't on the island, you know the actual proper pronunciations of simple words like Newport. It's like Medina. It can't say Medina, like our river, Medina. It says Medina, things like that. Right.
Just south of me by about 20 miles is Medina, Ohio.
Really? That's probably why it says it then. It's a British sat-nav voice. Right then, where do we get up to with the feed? Before we move on to, I'm going to get my thingy ready. Sorry about this, Debbie. Having too much fun. Sorry?
We need to hear what Mary
I thought. Know. If you'd let me continue. Good Lord. Yes, so Laurie Nick says, halfway up the stairs is correct. So that was Alan T. Butcher. Then Laurie Nick said, yes, Debbie, and we'll pine amongst the conifers in search of wild black metal bands.
Yay!
Ian Kirk says, some Americans seem to pronounce Graham. That's a good point. I'll write that one down. I'm going to nick that one off you, actually.
You do Graham. Say Graham.
Graham instead of Graham. Yeah, good Graham. One. That's Graham. A point for Ian. I like that one. Alan T. Butcher said, fjord is a great word, even better than ferd. P-F-E-R-D. Well, I don't know what that is. Laurie Nick says, sacker? Alan T. Butcher said, route. Good point. Another good one. I'll write these down. Well done.
Oh, no.
Laurie Nick says, I think we're all guilty but for far worse, you ain't been to my old neighbourhood in Jersey. Jersey. At least they can pronounce Jersey as Jersey.
Jersey.
That's correct.
Yeah, they say Jersey.
Jersey, Christ, correct. That's how you say Jersey. Oh, Jersey. Anyway. Yeah.
It's the East Coast accent.
But Jersey, great. I've never been to Jersey. I'd like to go there one day. I mean the proper Jersey, not the one in America. Right. Laurie Nick says, folks who don't have teeth may well say Dennis.
Yes, that's good.
All right, then. Back to Doctor Who. Everybody, this has been a big build-up, and here it is. Go on then, Mary.
Well, after the first time I saw it, I would definitely have given it the thumbs down. There was very little about it that I liked. But then I watched it a second time, and a lot of things clicked for me that made no sense the first time around. I liked that there were some nice scary things happening at times, you know, like the cabin looked creepy and the roaring of that monster in the woods, and, you know, it was properly scary. Although his section doesn't make much sense, the ribbons kind of introduces another scary element to an otherwise, you know, just emotional episode. So I saw some sense in having to include something else to be scary about, and the flesh moths and all that. What happened on the second viewing is that I bought into what the Solitrack world was presenting to them. Just like we're all saying, oh, the dad's so rubbish and all that. Yeah, initially I thought that too. But then on the second viewing, I saw that, and the doctor says, oh, that thing has such a draw for Graham that he really wants to go through that mirror and that. And even though he denied it, he really did when I get pulled into that other world. And so I think that both Graham and the father, Hannah's father, were pretty much just kind of captivated by the world that Solitract.
Yes.
Presented that I'm not sure that they were totally in their right minds. So I want to give him a little bit of a pass on that. Plus, he knew Hannah wasn't in any danger. He put that monster out there and made everything scary to keep her.
But how is she supposed to feed herself and stuff? She needs sweets to eat.
He knew that she wasn't in danger, and he left her food and all that.
Sweet.
But his attraction to go through into that other world was so powerful that I think, you know, it scrambled a little bit of his parental things. Also, right off, I did not feel any of the emotional stuff that Graham was putting out that you want to nominate him for awards for, because I knew that there was something wrong happening here. So his draw to Grace was very powerful, but he too then was not necessarily thinking of Ryan, you know, and because he was suffering kind of the same thing that Hannah's father was. It's like, okay, it's the world that he's in, except he does suddenly, something in his head clicks when Grace is begging him to stay with her, when he says, wait a minute, you know, you can't be Grace because you're not caring about Ryan, you know. So that's what made him suddenly realize how deluded he was and how Grace was not real. I did have a question, though, about how is it that Eric could go back and forth between these worlds, which I got the feeling he did a few times, without encountering ribbons or the flesh moths or, you know, all that dangerous stuff. Because it's not mentioned. Nobody asks him, you know, gee, how did you get through without a problem?
Yeah.
So that part didn't make any sense to me. And another thing that kind of clicked for me was Grace, when it came to her necklace, the frog necklace.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says, I like frogs. Makes me think that is why the Solitrack took on the image of a frog and spoke in her voice.
Except it didn't know Grace.
What do you mean it didn't know Grace?
Well,
where does it
have it find out about Grace and what Grace liked?
It made Grace. Come on.
Grace. It brought her into his reality the same time that Graham and the others showed up. So he had to have known something about Grace. And he says he likes the voice. He likes all that. But overall, I liked it as a story. You know, like I said, the emotional stuff never hit me. And the ribbons part didn't make a lot of sense, other than, like I said, introducing another scary thing into the story. But so I'm about, I'd say like a 6 out of 10 on this one.
Six? Oh, I wouldn't quite go that low. But thank you anyway, Mary.
Master?
Yes?
I need to excuse myself for a few minutes.
Oh, good. We can talk about him. Excellent.
Yes. I'll listen to it later.
Well, yeah, oh, good. At least somebody does.
He did sound a bit desperate.
He's probably going off to pronounce some restroom or bathroom in regards to toilet or something like that, aren't they? Right then. Sorry, we're going to move on to feedback in a moment after I've sorted myself out. Hang on, I've just got to type something in. I'm doing multitasking. Pardon, Debbie?
I did Kirby's boob because he wasn't here.
Oh, I say thanks. All right, hang on. Just getting myself lined up. This is very slick podcasting.
Somebody posted on Facebook about y'all pronounce it data or data.
Ooh, data.
Data.
It's used it for two different meanings.
Well, data. They also used the term data as the character in Star Trek: The Next Generation. I always wondered if Patrick Stewart had influence over the pronunciation of Data's name.
Data. Yeah. He does say it rather well, doesn't
data.
He?
You know, when we say data, we mean information. When we say data, we're speaking specifically of computer.
Okay.
That could be the same here. I haven't really considered that.
We pronounce it both ways, depending on what we mean.
Actually, that's true. We do too, actually, Adam, if you think about it.
Indeed. Anyway, right. I can't pronounce his name. I did ask how you pronounce it, but Coclud just announced we won't be back till 2020 after the New Year special sulky face. We sulky face it as well, but at least we're coming back. That's to be celebrated, is it not? So we'll have one episode, maybe two, in 2019. Before a new series. I think that's all they're saying. There won't be another series until 2020. Joshua Dyball says the frog was the symbol of Graham and Grace's love. Graham wore the frog necklace to remember her by. Six, Mary? No way. Thank you, Joshua. Right then, we're going to move on to feedback. Right, I'm going to do them in order that we got them. I'm not necessarily the stuff that we had in the Facebook question. I understand there's quite a lot of that. So I'm just going to do the stuff we had via email. That's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com for the benefit of the people. I keep knocking my microphone, so sorry, listeners. I've knocked it twice, once from my elbow, and now I just bit my finger on it. So there's somebody's going to get buffering in their ears through this
episode. I haven't heard anything.
You won't, because it's... This is the podcasting microphone here, whereas you're listening to me through the Skyping microphone there, which is up there, actually. That was very confusing. Right, I'm just going to type on here, 20mb.feedback. Oh, there's a funny noise upstairs. My A button stopped working. .feedback@gmail.com. Right, that's the email address for feedback. You don't have to use that, but it's quite handy. Also, you can send audio feedback through that particular medium. Or video feedback. That'd be quite funny, wouldn't it? Wouldn't be the see, obviously. I couldn't play it on the YouTube feed.
You could share it on the Facebook page.
No. Let's stick to audio. This is an audio presentation. That the video part of it is just a bonus. Right, then. So we're going to go... Oh, Joshua Dyball says, according to the web... And I saw it mentioned in a DT documentary recently. You were right, Adam. Eh? What? What about what? I'm always right about something. I don't know which particular bit of correctness you're talking about. But
you don't care, just as long as you're right.
Yeah. You're right, yeah.
Yep, I'm right. Love to know what I'm right about. I'll give myself a ding then. Thanks a lot. Right, right then, let's go back to... the feedback, that's what we're talking about. Right, so where's my jingles folder gone? I'm using two very sophisticated computers at the moment, all at the same time. So, and I'm making clunking noises on the table where the microphone is. So, again, apologies to the listeners. Right then. So, what we're going to do, we're going to do this.
Hey. It Takes You Away by Ed Hein.
Is this
this the real life? Is this just fantasy?
Do not want those to be our last words. The three actors playing the family are all Norwegian. Norway. Yes way, dude. Time might not work the same way in the solitary act. In many stories, Eric would have returned to the real world to find decades had passed. Eric has a store of dead birds in his shed, and Ribbons is plucking one when he is found. Probably, Eric traded birds for safe passage between mirrors.
Oh, that makes sense.
Anna is blind, so she can't see the mirror. They're portrayed as moths, but they behave like vampire bats, crossed with piranhas.
Mm.
I thought Graham might stay.
Oh, right.
Why did Gollum want the Sonic? Eric is a terrible parent. He abandons his daughter so he could spend time with what he thinks is his wife, Flirty Belfast.
Yeah. Thank you.
The doctor is still willing to sacrifice herself so he can go home. Some fans do not like the ending and are like, what the frog? I wish it could have been Clara instead of CGI frog. Like Rose in the War Doctor episode.
Yeah.
The sheep plot against us and have been pulling them all over our eyes.
Oh, but I'm cheating.
Bye for now.
That was Ian Kirk, everybody.
Yay!
Yay!
Sorry, did I miss Ian's?
Yay! Yes.
Did he have the business where he thinks that the girl was Norwegian?
Yes.
Yes.
She's not.
No. Just a very good actress. Joshua Dybel said, sorry about the data, ST. Patrick Stewart said it this way and it stuck, data. I was right again.
Yeah.
You guys are commenting over about the little thing I put on Facebook.
I don't know. I'm not looking at Facebook. I'm in the middle of doing a podcast.
It was a notation that when you write it down, what it says is someone posted, y'all pronounce it data or data.
Yeah.
And then someone responded, I'm mad that I read these words in two different ways.
Mm. Okay. There we go. Back to feedback.
Tripping if you think it's data and not data.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, we'd already talked about that.
Yeah.
If we had, just shut up. Oh. I think I did I play the right one, Ian? Oh, my God. Sorry, Ian. I was doing them in order, and I just got one up that says, don't use the other.
Oh.
Yeah, because what he posted on Facebook is different. It ends differently than...
Kirby
missed that one. So we're going to do the new one. Sorry, Ian.
Double bonus.
Double bonus. It's a double whammy, Mr. Ian Kirk. Take two.
Take us away.
Hello, Twitter Big Man Podcast, Ian Kirk. It Takes You Away by Ed Hein.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy?
You do not want those to be our last words.
No.
The two actors playing the parents are Norwegian.
No, they're not.
No way. Yes way, dude. Time might not work the same way in the solitary act. In many stories, Eric would have returned to the real world to find decades had passed. Eric has a store of dead birds in his shed, and Ribbons is plucking one when he is found. Probably, Eric traded birds for safe passage between mirrors.
Ah.
Anna is blind, so she can't see the mirror. They're portrayed as moths, but they behave like vampire bats, crossed with piranhas. I thought Graham might stay. Why did Gollum want the Sonic? Eric is a terrible parent. He abandons his daughter so he could spend time with what he thinks is his wife, Flirty Belfast. The doctor's still willing to sacrifice herself so he can go home. Some fans do not like the ending, and are like, what the frog? The two women in the solo chat are as realistic as possible, to deceive Eric and Graham into not wanting to return to the real world. The talking frog, however, doesn't have to look like a real talking frog. It can look fake, as it is only something for the doctor to focus on when talking to the solo tract. The frogs eat moths.
Hmm. Good point.
It's so attractive, it's not East Space, is it? Just as long as there's no chance of Adric, I'll be stowed away on the TARDIS again. No, the Punjab story, there was a reference to the artist Banksy. The work of his, a picture of a girl with a red balloon, was sold at auction, and then a device hidden in the frame cut it to ribbons. In this story, we have a character called Ribbons, who was made of red balloon.
Wow.
I wish he could have been fairer instead of a CGI frog. Like Rose in the War Doctor episode. The sheep plot against us, and have been pulling the wool over our eyes. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. I can see why you sent the second one through. It was brilliant, wasn't it, everybody?
Yes, it was.
And a bonus for everybody to get two Ian Kirks on the same episode of the show. Right then, Coklud.
And I was glad of it because I was able to hear it.
Yes. Coklud says, Co sounds like toe, Clud sounds like mud. 1,500 subscribers. Size isn't everything, Coklud. right then, yes, we've got more feedback coming through. We've got this one.
Hello, Twin and Megabyte podcast team, gang, fam. No, I'll move on from that. So here I am leaving feedback, and this is kind of unusual because I usually just join you guys for recordings.
Yes, you lazy old soul.
When I'm on the show, it's usually with a kind of live recording session, whereas this time I'm providing feedback.
Yes.
And I really wanted to talk about this episode because I agree with Adam that it's outstanding. Personally, I rank it next to my other two favorites of the year, which are Rosa and Demons of the Punjab. But there's something slightly more pleasing about this one for me, which is that
Frogs.
It's as good as the other two, but without being based on real events. That doesn't detract from the other two, but it's kind of like an easy blueprint for the writer, where all they really have to do is add the Doctor and Co. and the villain into stuff that's already happened. You've already got an emotional journey for the characters, so I feel like it's slightly easier to write a historical than it is a completely original episode, which this is slightly more original.
Yeah.
I say slightly because it felt like it had a lot of common sci-fi tropes and a plotline with Graham that had me thinking of Doctor Who's very own Amy's Choice, which led to me affectionately referring to this episode as Graham's Choice. I love all three episodes, but there's something about this that feels slightly more original because it's not based on an actual event. But still, all three are amazing. Something I particularly appreciated about this episode is that it gave all of our major players things to do. And there were things that were both helpful to the plot and true to their characters, even if they weren't always nice things, such as Ryan being quite tactless when talking about Hannah's father just leaving, because that's what he thinks might have happened because of his situation with his dad. And it shows that, you know, not every companion is going to be perfect. They're not all saints. It also shows how scarred he is by the lack of his father in his life, and that adds another layer to his character, which is quite powerful. And it's kind of contrast to Ryan losing his grandmother and still continuing to carry on, which, you know, it's a tragic thing. Lots of people need time to mourn, but it's, you know, it's quite noble that he's still going. That's a positive version of character growth. This is kind of like through negative means, it adds another level to his character, and that's quite well done. Another thing I really liked is that Yaz actually got to use some of her police training. Yes, writers for Doctor Who, if you're listening to this, please remember that you have a member of the police force in the TARDIS team, and you could use that fact a little more, because Yaz deserves more opportunities to shine, and her training might be a really good way to give her more of a standing in plots in the future. So just bear that in mind. But thankfully, this is one of those episodes, a rare one, but in this case, she gets to use her skills to help, and she helps by de-escalating the situation, by relating to Hannah and learning more about the mystery that's surrounding them, and that's really good. I mean, look, I really like Yaz because I really like Mandip Gill. And I've kind of always noticed that she does do a fair bit, but she's not always present in the plots, and that's the big letdown with her character. But she's often there to she's always right behind the Doctor usually, which is really cool. Like, she just goes into danger even with the Doctor, partly because she knows the Doctor's there and the Doctor's just amazing, an amazing being, and will save the day, but also because she's got faith in herself as well, which is quite a powerful thing. And she de-escalated the situation in Rosa after Ryan got hit. So, again, subtle things, but she's still doing a fair bit. But I think she needs a few more episodes where she's up front and center.
Not going to get them now, is she?
Kablam wasn't the most amazing episode for me, but that did what this episode does and gave all the characters something to do. Speaking of all the characters, I'm going to move on to the Doctor. Jodie is effortlessly brilliant as the Doctor now. I just love her. And something that I'm really happy about is that the writing is starting to keep up with her in all her glory. In this, she just manages to be really quirky and funny, kind of very 11th Doctor-y, where she's eating the mud or the dirt and then talking about the Woolly Rebellion and all the sheep and all of that. Mm. I could see Matt Smith doing that, but it's got a very Jodie spin to it. Very fun. And then she gets, you know, quite serious and authoritative once things start going dark and mysterious, and once they get in the house. And, like, that message about assume that Hannah's father is dead and try and keep her safe and try and figure out what's going on. Very serious. And she just kind of, like, she set the tone for that scene. It was really well done. And something that's happened in this episode, and if you have me as a friend on Facebook, you would have seen me write about this a few times recently in huge posts, because that's what I like to do.
That means nobody would have seen it.
Go on about it. And if I'm not podcasting, I'll just put all over Facebook. I think she had a doctor moment in this, and a bit of context. What I refer to as a doctor moment is where a specific incarnation of the doctor really comes into fruition. And a moment that sums it up quite beautifully is one from Mummy on the Orient Express from Capaldi's first season, where he tricks the mummy and stops it from attacking one of the other passengers and makes it come straight for him. And in that moment, he's being very heroic and he's acting like a shield, and he's armed with only faith in himself and his deductive abilities and his faith that he's managed to figure out how to deal with the mummy. And it's a great moment of tension and great directing, and everything just really comes together production-wise and story-wise, and it really brings the 12th Doctor's character to the foreground, where just before that he said something like, I know a few people have died, but we don't have time to mourn, otherwise more will die. He's very logical about it, whereas some other doctors would be, sorry, I'm so, so sorry,
yeah,
as the 10th Doctor would say.
And the 13th.
And for me, I feel like something similar happened in this episode, where the Mirror Universe, which I've forgotten its name, Siltax?
Something
I'm
going
to go with that and maybe not name it again. I'll just refer to it as the Mirror Universe, because I've only seen this once, but I loved it, and I need to find the time to watch it again, because I think I'll love it even more, to be honest. But when the Mirror Universe, it wanted somebody with a lot of desire and a lot of love, and it just kind of wanted to latch onto them, from what I remember.
It's been like a child.
About a week. And the moment where the Doctor said, well, I've got so much desire and so much knowledge and so much experience, et cetera, and so much love that I'm the best candidate. Do you really want to go for them? And again, she's kind of jumping in the way. She's shielding the others. She is becoming the Doctor, and it's all out of kindness. And I think the thing about this Doctor is, in contrast to Capaldi, who was quite logical, quite serious, which often made him cold, you know, lines like, he's the first layer on top if you want to say goodbye. I think this Doctor is very kind, and that's a great contrast to the previous Doctor. That often happens. And I think we got to see that in this moment and this episode, and that's really good. Now, to sum up, because I've been going on for quite a while, which I do when I leave feedback, if you listen to Staggering Stories, for example, story has a little bit of everything. It starts off with a bit of mystery and a and a suspenseful tone, and then the tone adopts a more adventure-filled science fiction feeling while traveling between our universe and the mirror one, with the one that smells of wee, who's Ribbons. Ribbons? Is that it?
Yes.
Anyway, I'm going to move on. And then it turns much more dramatic when Bradley Walsh gets an opportunity to yet again break our hearts. And then after that, we get a moment that feels like it stepped right out of Discworld or another corner of Sir Terry Pratchett's mind. The quirky ending with that mirror universe manifesting itself as a frog, because Grace liked frogs. And people have labeled that as too weird for Doctor Who, but for me, it fits in perfectly. Yes. And it gives this episode another layer of enjoyment, which, to be honest, each episode this season has had a particular feel and committed to it, whereas this had a little bit of everything, and I kind of, honestly, preferred that a bit. Every other episode has been pretty dang good. There have been a few duds.
There's definitely been a
palette. In the UK, I'm looking at you. But this one, it had a little bit of everything, and that gave that a bit more pace and a bit more liveliness to it. It felt a bit more fresh. And then after that, there's a nice little parallel where the two pairs of people who lost people, i.e. Graham and Ryan and then Hannah and her father, they all had to start letting go of the past and loved ones that they've lost and work together to move forward as their lives continue. And it's a very nice little parallel, and that's very much symbolized for us, the audience, and between Ryan and Graham when Ryan calls Graham granddad. We've all been waiting for that, and it was towards the end of the season, so I think well done all of us for placing bets on that and winning, basically. I don't know if you placed money, but I'm sure we all called that. I think pretty much everyone in fandom called that. But anyway, personally, I'm just glad it didn't happen while one of them was dying. I thought it would, but it didn't. Anyway, I'm going to head off now, because like I said earlier, I tend to waffle on with feedback, and I've gone on for quite a while. So I'm going to head off now. See you later.
Thank you, Reese. It's a bit like Who's the Man podcast wedged into the 20 megabyte podcast.
Yeah, very much so. He hasn't done one of those in years.
Can you please keep that sort of thing coming in, please, Reese?
I think everybody is reacting so strongly to the great storytelling that has happened this season, and I think the general relief that everyone has felt that this season has been overall strong. That is reflecting in so many different people are posting about it on Facebook and things like that that probably wouldn't have given it the time of day. Yeah. But it's interesting to see just how much more enthusiastic people are about it as the stories have gone on. But just knowing that people are out there watching it now because people are going, what, you missed that one? And as you said earlier, with it being on a Sunday night, people are hitting it who've never hit it before. So
I tend to disagree with you, Deb. I'm hearing quite the opposite, that the stories are weak. I mean, people seem generally to love Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor, but the consensus that I would draw from what I'm seeing is that people generally don't care for the stories.
The Chibnall ones, unfortunately, have let the side down. If we could have had as strong writing as we have had in about four of the stories now, yeah, if that could have been consistent, this would have been award-winning.
Yeah, probably.
Well, obviously, they're talking about the fact that we're not going to get much in 2019. I wouldn't worry too much, but one, it's going to be a bit annoying to miss out on any Doctor Who that year, but... one, that gives them time to write better for the characters. Two, it gives them... we hope, yes. Another thing I forgot what I was going to say now.
Big Finish will step into the breach for next year.
No, I'm just thinking about there are good reasons. I mean, it's like Bradley Walsh is busy doing the chase. He's got stuff he wants to do. They can keep Bradley Walsh in the series, which is another good thing. So there's obviously a very busy actor,
a performer. Yeah, rather not lose the star.
But yeah, so it's a shame. I can't understand it to a degree because they could have started filming now and have a new series in the autumn. But there's obviously reasons behind it. That might be a main reason. I think Bradley Walsh has been very popular, and I think he's an asset to the show, and I think
so many people have been so surprised by it, haven't they?
I wasn't, was I, Debbie?
No, you weren't. You've been saying all the way along. I was surprised.
I must go back and find the original comment I made when the announcement came through that people were slagging him off, and I want to bump it up to the top to show.
I think I said I was hopeful that he'll surprise us, and he's just been stonking. But yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect.
And he did surprise you, didn't he, Debbie?
Absolutely, he's my favourite.
I think
love Jodie Whittaker, but he's brilliant.
I think the theme of this series, or this show, sorry, this episode of the 20 Megabyte Podcast is Adam is right.
Except when he isn't.
And now Adam is posing smugly. Right then, let's move on. Right then, Debbie, I sent you something through, didn't I?
You did a little while ago, yeah.
Go on then.
All right. dry throat.
Yay!
The Doctor through the looking glass, or why a frog and not a parrot with beautiful blue plumage. Dear 20 Megabyters, It Takes You Away is, of course, a closely studied fable regarding grief in relation to loss. The solid tract is clearly a portrayal of grief itself, which, whilst difficult to avoid being overwhelmed by, must be come to terms with as its dominance is inimical to moving forward. However, although grief might seem to be a trap in which you may be caught, in truth it can be turned into a friend, which can always viscerally link you to that which you have lost whilst not having to incapacitate you. The reference to the Woolly Rebellion was an early foreshadowing that even the most likely to follow blindly will usually find their own path in the end. The cheese and pickle sandwich was a symbol of Graham's resourcefulness and forethought, which puts his final decision beyond doubt. There was strong and long-established imagery of hope employed in the Red Lantern help passage, I think I missed the word, help passage between the worlds. Eric is a clear example who has been completely lost to grief. His bear traps and child abuse shows the dark side of his obsession. There is much here for further analysis, definitely. It should be noted that while some apparently suggest that the representation of conscious universe by a fairly unrealistic-looking frog was silly and off-putting, In fact, this contention is ludicrous. Such people must justify why a more realistic frog or some other representation would be more appropriate. The truth is that the reference point could be anything which has caught the attention of the conscious universe, and the conscious universe is wholly out of our experience, and therefore, whatever the representation chosen, we are not qualified to dispute it. We also learn that Grace survived her death to live on in an alternate world where Graham was able to be reunited with her, and we also learn that she didn't really. All in all, it takes you away as a thought-provoking story that is full of interest and incident, which once again creates enough strands to occupy the TARDIS crew as is required. The intent in setting this in Norway may be to propose that the nature of the tale is Northern European in character, in the sense that would have been well understood by the renowned proponents of such myths, Professor Tolkien and Lewis. The word world between the worlds is very reminiscent of Lewis's cosmic scenario leading to Narnia and the Magician's Nephew. I did think that. I did wonder what that reminded me of. Thanks, Alan. Okay. The use of mirrors to transition between likewise as parallels as well as does ribbons. This story is perhaps 90 minutes too short, as it would have been nice to include some manifestation of a particular loss the Doctor has suffered as part of the scenario. After all, who wouldn't want to see Clara and the 13th Doctor for an extended episode? Next up, Doctor Who and the Dental Cult of the Uxboots, or the Pirate Planet Redux. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butch.
Thank you, Mr. T. Butch, of the Alan-ness, for that particular bit of feedback.
It's
It does tend to not post it when you're not on the show for some reason. Right, we also had Mr. Bartlett Sloan, who posted a request for feedback on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Master, you could theoretically go back to, there was your post a week ago where you said outstanding.
Oh, I didn't even know.
After that.
Okay, let's see if I can find that. Thanks for that, Kirby. Could have told me that before. Might add to my
I referred to it in my post.
Yeah, that doesn't help me. I'm still going back in time. What was it? I'm only on
December,
the 6th.
December 2nd at 2:21 p.m.
Which is that
one word outstanding.
It wasn't 2:21 our time, Adam.
Oh.
Oh, I found it. Right then, okay. One word, outstanding. That's quite a correct statement, has to be said. Laurie Nix, can't wait. I haven't even seen it yet. Jeff Waddle, best single episode for years. I suspect by now he doesn't like it, but there you go. And then Laurie Nix posted a gif of a little girl saying she can't wait. And then I said, Jeff Waddle, can't argue. We, the whole family, were completely absorbed, and Bradley Walsh should be up for an award. I think he should be, yes. Especially the yesterday's episode of The Chase was a really, really good one as well. And Stacey Solomon won £60,000. Can you believe that? They don't know who Stacey Solomon is. I don't care. Right, well, then. What?
I said I don't know who Stacey Solomon is.
Don't worry
is.
About it. Keith Allen won some money on it as well. Do you know who Keith Allen is?
Yes.
Not you. Was I out
no.
to...
No.
Good. Right. Okay. Rhys Parton says, "I love that. This is the second or third time you've said that this season, Jeff." And Jeff Order said, three episodes for me have been outstanding. A couple have been great. There's a few for me that have been average, and a couple of clunkers. But that's still a better percentage of ones that I had to watch again in season since season 5.
It's not been enough of a percentage to warrant Jeff to buy the series.
Oh, maybe Delrose says hard to watch and so brilliant too. Laurie Nix said stop, I want to see it now. So this is going to be interesting to see what she says, isn't it?
Yes.
Brian Doob says a great episode, I've been enjoying series 11. Good for you. Laurie Nix said here we go. If you view it as a Norwegian fairy tale, then yes, I totally agree. I want to go between the two worlds, so to speak. Ingest a toadstool and don't look too close for logic. However, what I really wanted was Ryan to find outside the cabin was, and there's a clip of the immortal All Shall Fall music video, which I'm not going to play. This is an audio presentation. Debbie Merrow said, I want to go to Norway, meet you there, Laurie Nix. And then we had some sort of strange plan that I'm not too sure Tom knows about going on.
He's leaving, isn't he?
Okay, let's go back to the more recent request from Mr. Bart Sloan. Laurie Nix has written a long one, which, because this is Kirby's little platform, Kirby can read Laurie Nix's comments.
Yeah, let me find the thread.
You've had plenty of time.
No, I was reading the other things.
You shouldn't have been.
Laurie Nix says, after my initial amusement, read this episode, because I love magical realism and folk horror, I'm growing not to like it as much. Yay!
Well, here we go, Laurie.
A stream of consciousness fairy story, a weird nightmare lucid dream that you discuss over breakfast, or that trip you take after ingesting an odd mushroom in the forest. But it doesn't hold up otherwise on subsequent viewings. It was full of surprises and some great Bradley Walsh acting, yes. The blind actress was also excellent. I can't get over how the doctor can just leave this girl who's was being terrorized by her dad with him at the end of the episode. Somebody called Child Protective Services.
Yeah, I agree.
What would it have taken for them to write an excuse that he was being mind-controlled but is now back to normal, or seen from an Oslo psychologist's office showing that the dad was getting help and the daughter had other more stable relatives who were looking after them both? Wi-Fi and friends don't cut it if your parent is fragile and unstable enough to abandon, terrorize you, and maybe force you to listen to Slayer. and Rubens, bless his seven stomachs. I liked that interlude, but it went nowhere. The moths didn't really menace anyone after he was eaten. Maybe they were full.
Probably.
I still applaud that this is a dream state and wild ride where weird stuff goes down and you just accept it, and then you're off on another tangent, and so who cares? But it leaves too many plot holes and disturbing questions if you haven't been licking a toad. Well, yes, Laurie, I completely agree with you.
No, Laurie, I completely disagree with you. And let me say, in regards to the looking too deeply into the bad parenting of her dad, I think we can all draw our own conclusions on his ability as a parent, as we do in general life with people around us in the street. It's just not our business. And if that maybe later on, he could have been called by the authorities. It wasn't the doctor's business or our business. We're just watching the story, which is absolutely fab. Right then, stuff has come through on the.
Oh, I just wanted to say, Mary, he's not going away, but he starts a new job, which means he's up very early. So,
not much
and
fun.
It's fine, we've got some work, so happy.
Good. Right then, Alan T. Butcher said, the Solid Tract has an alternate analysis, of course. It offers a world at the other end of transition with attractive, nostalgic things for many, but which are imaginary, false, and will degrade into chaos. He then says, oi, I've posted all for Series 11. Have I missed any, Alan? I don't know. I'll make me feel like I might have missed something. I thought we said oi. And then Laurie Nix said, it's repetitive. Yes, I know. And then Alan T. Butcher said, the Solid Tract is Brexit.
Yes.
I really didn't want to mention that word on this show.
It's a dirty
I am
film
sick
word.
To death of Brexit. Or Brexit, I should be saying. It's Brexit. Brexit is how Tony Blair says it.
It's a dirty word.
I beg your pardon?
Brexit is a dirty word.
You just said it, Debbie. Laurie Nix said, message retracted. That's a shame. I'd love to know what she was saying. Right then, moving on. Ian Kirk sent his script. Kirby Bartlett Sloan said, Ian Kirk, negative master. Ellie Wallwalk is British. The actors who played her parents... Oh, yeah, he's just being Kirby and sort of being...
Yes.
Sort of, I'm right. I know something you don't. And then Jeff Waddle says, Christ, I've just sent feedback, and I guessed you'd be playing They're Coming to Take Me Away by Napoleon the
14th.
Yes. Ian Kirk then says, I have corrected my audio feedback. Sorry, Ian. Joshua Dyball. Oh, he's written something. Oh, Debbie, you can read the Joshua Dyball one.
I'm not reading. I'm not with you. Sorry.
You had some terrorists. Go on then, Kirby. You do the Joshua stuff, mate.
What?
Kirby. He's one of the podcasters on the show, Deb. If you'd like to do the Joshua feedback then, Kirby.
Me?
Yes,
why
you.
Why don't Mary do it?
Because Mary can't see it at the moment.
That's right. I'm just listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, so am I. I'm not looking.
What's wrong with you people? Superb episode, 8 out of 10. Reminded me a bit of Stranger Things and Sapphire and Steel. Loved Ribbons. That's not my Wii. of the Seven Stomachs.
Yeah.
Great character played well by excellent actor Kevin Eldon. The dad gets a hard time off many fans, but as his daughter points out, he hadn't been well since his wife died. Clearly, he had become mentally ill. Probably a touch of cabin fever, too.
Ooh.
He needed help.
Ooh.
Christ. This could have easily been a 10 out of 10 classic if only the soundtrack had presented itself as anyone the Doctor had lost. They're hardly short of choices. In fact, instead, we get a rubbish CGI frog with Grace's voice. That didn't work for me at all. It was a missed opportunity, big time.
No, don't send him to me, Adam.
Sod this obsession with denying Doctor Who's heritage. Moff did it this... He's missing some words, I think. Moff did it this for Series 10, and he did a good job of it. Got the balance right, in my opinion. But why is Chibnall doing it again, only stricter? Does it really help the show? Almost the last episode, and still hardly anything of the TARDIS interior either. They just go in and out of the doors like the old days. Never mind. Otherwise, I loved it.
Don't bother me. Not that keen on the TARDIS interior anyway, so I don't really want to see much more of it.
One of my favorite lines is as they are entering the TARDIS, when the Doctor says, "Oh, I see the sheep have moved on. They're probably off plotting."
Back to the YouTube comments. Alan T. Butcher says, "I believe you missed the Punjab." That's why Debbie said halfway through the thing, "Don't send him to me." Well, I did. Yes, I missed that one. Which is, of course, a phenomenal feedback. So Alan T. Butcher says the feedback you're going to read after the next bits is phenomenal. Now, I promised also that, Mary, that we wouldn't possibly be still running by 10 p.m., but we're having too much fun, so we are.
I'll go up and wake him up.
Oh, it's you. Sorry, Debbie. It was Debbie. I promised Debbie. I do apologise, Debbie. Right then, so, especially
he's
you.
He's got bed already.
No wonder you said don't send it to me. Lillian Robin said, "I loved it. Didn't have a problem with the frog. Sorry, I haven't been writing long reviews for a while. Been busy." Well, get on with some long reviews, Lillian.
I will read this and then
I want a review as long as your stockings. Jeff,
what?
I want a review as long as her stockings. She's got long stockings.
Adam,
what?
Should I read this and then I can get going?
But you're going to miss all the rest of the feedback.
Yes, I know, but I can listen and I will.
Nose growing a little bit there, Mrs. Melrose.
Oh, shut up.
Go on then.
All right, okay.
Alan T. Butcher, episode 2.
There's a lot of feedback this week. Witnessing the Khyber passing, or one wedding and no funeral?
Ooh.
Alan. Dear 20 Megabyters, The Demons of the Punjab is, of course, a closely studied historical episode set in the moment on the partition of India in 1947. It must be said that the necessary issues required for the telling of the story are so well and transparently elucidated that they need little explanation from me. The way Indexit from the British Empire was accomplished was clumsy, irresponsible and rushed. It had been dragged out in the earlier part of the century and tensions had built. The post-war government was hasty because economic imperatives had meant maintaining British government of all India was a real drain of resources much needed to rebuild after the war. This tale tells the story of the consequences for many due to that haste and a bad deal done for the many that died or were made into refugees. A timely message. It should be noted that while some suggest this would have been better as a pure historical without the intrusion of the alien Thajarans, in fact, the Thajarans provided a very appropriate means by which to emphasise the degree to which the disruption and acrimony at this time led to many dying alone and disrespected as many were displaced and forced to flee. We also learn that Nina, that used to work at Holby Base Casualty Department, had lived long and was well preserved into the 21st century, having been a witness to the partition of India. She was also split into another self living in an elderly four in Sheffield. Sorry, Alan, didn't know about that sentence. All in all, The Demons of the Punjab is a very well put together historical episode, which has been a very welcome trend. I'm nearly done, Tom. Particularly pleasing here was that the aliens were in no way actors within the plot, and as such, the menace and drama here was purely resultant of the historical circumstances. Once again, the current theme of hope, here embodied by love, emerges to stand, albeit tragically against the countervailing tide of hatred and division that was prevalent due to this badly handled and very difficult circumstance. This story was perhaps one episode too short, as there were many other aspects of the situation that might have been explored, but I suspect they made a good choice pitching it where they did. Next up, Doctor Who and the Wen Skin Bomber, or Yaz and the Plastic Postman. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Yes, and thank you very much, Alan T. Butcher, for the delay on that particular bit of feedback. And thank you very much, Mrs. Debbie Melrose, for staying up later than she was supposed to. And just a note before you go, this is the last time for over a year that we'll be doing it this late. That sounds a bit rude. This late on a Sunday evening, because we're going back to the 7 p.m. But next week, we're not even recording on the Sunday, because I've got the M&S Christmas party, so it'll be on the Monday.
Mine's on Saturday.
Yeah. It'll be on the Monday morning. After.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah, it's okay.
Are we carrying on with the story, or are we just going to review the series?
We're doing the story we watched today.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's so weird podcasting straight after an episode.
Yes.
Oh. Right, I do apologise, but I'm loving and leaving you. You all take care and enjoy the rest of the show.
Right, good. Right, we can talk about it now. Good night.
Yeah, good night.
Bye. Bye, Deb. Okay, right then. So, Jeffrey Williams says, I have to give this episode an 8 out of 10. The acting was superb all the way round. The story was certainly not predictable, and this made it a pleasure to watch. Oh, yeah, and the talking frog. I personally don't think that was the best episode of the series so far. Okay. Ian Kirk's script, Kirby Bartlett Sloan going on about a Calgon bath powder commercial from 1978, and then posts a Slayer logo. He really was paying attention to the show this week, and that is about it, really. And I think, never mind. That's about it for feedback, unless I've missed something.
No, I think you got it.
Mm-hmm. Got a little bit of time, very little bit of time, to move on to Doctor Who News. Doctor Who News. .net. See what's going on there, shall we? But we know what one of the bits of news is going to be. Right, what was the date of the show last week? It was December the 2nd. Let's go back to there. Right. It takes you away overnight viewing figures of 5.07 million. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here got 10 million. It's a very good show. And it's got Barrowman hurt himself a few days ago. He took a tumble and sprained his ankle. Everybody thought he'd broken it, but he's back on the show with a sort of strange boot. And it was a lovely, very moving scene when they got to meet their loved ones. He got to meet his husband and his reaction to seeing his husband. Very, very moving. Worlds Collide ticket date announced. BBC Studios and Escape Hunt have announced the on-sale date of tickets for the up-and-coming Doctor Who Live escape game, Worlds Collide. I suppose it's some sort of computer thing, is it? I don't know. Witchfinder's official ratings of 7.21 million, not bad at all, really, with the appreciation index of 81. So that's pretty good, really, even though it's not highly rated, that particular story, especially by people who aren't Doctor Who fans. Yes, but I was talking about my colleague Emma Watts, who is not a Doctor Who fan. She just watched it because it was on, and as she has with other episodes, and didn't like it at all. The Macra Terror is coming.
No such thing as Macra.
The Macra Terror is coming out as a animation with the original soundtrack. I'm looking forward to getting that. Nice to finally be able to find a Doctor Who video or DVD from the 1960s, so that's going to be bought, I can guarantee it. Well, it's a shame it's come out after we can't really review it because we've gone past it, but I'll certainly be buying
it. Can we interrupt the journey to look at it and review it?
No.
We've done it already.
Yeah, we've done it already, yes. Done it a while back.
I'm just wondering what we're going to do when it comes time for Shada, since we've added another Shada.
Well, I've already decided. No, the Shada we're going to do is the animated Shada, if possible, if you lot can get it. I can try and get a copy of it.
Yeah, I have it already. Good. But there have been several animated Shadas. There have been three.
The one that they've released as a BBC DVD.
The most recent one, okay.
Yeah, that's the one. Because that has been Tom Baker has filled in the gaps himself.
Yes, I loved it. I loved that end.
Okay, I haven't seen it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. As for what it is, so shut your face and don't do any spoilers, as if we don't know what the story is, you know. Right, what else we got here? Comic Art Auction, a charity in Liverpool, was auctioning off 30 pieces of original comic art, including Doctor Who related items. Not going to talk about that. Cybermen launch escape game. Oh, good lord, they're launching lots of computer based games in regards to Doctor Who.
Oh dear, they're the most recent Cybermen, too, the ones that
Yeah?
I like the design.
Oh. A Candy Jar Online Advent Calendar, which is a Lethbridge Stewart thingamajig. There's the name of the Doctor Who New Year outing has been revealed as the festive special of Radio Times, in the festive special of Radio Times, as being the resolution. So I wonder why that is. And I hope it's good.
Maybe it's going to be resolving. No, I don't know.
Well, I guess it's going to be a Chibnall episode, so we'd have to expect it's not going to be very good. Hopefully, it will be. Make the most of it, because there's not going to be any more Doctor Who for a while.
Was the one we reviewed?
Yeah, it's a Chibnall. No, one we looked at today. Yeah. Today's one wasn't a Chibnall. One that we talked about. The one that was on the episode on television today, the episode 10, was Chibnall.
Of course.
Yes. Okay. Right. Radio Times has a picture of the cast of Doctor Who on the front page with the Doctor wearing a gay pride scarf. And there's an official trailer for Resolution. I think they played that at the end of the episode that was on today, so I'm not going to play that one.
Yes, I already saw that.
And of course, no series planned for 2019. The BBC has confirmed this evening that Doctor Who will not return for a full series next year, but will instead be back in early 2020. So really, that's not that far away.
Back to spring?
It's not that far away. We've had longer gaps. No, especially when Tennant left. So there you go. That's it for Doctor Who news. We probably should do a bit on the sponsorship, especially with Who Won and Lavazzi, because it's coming up to Christmas. It's really your last chance to get your Doctor Who loved ones some gifts relating to Doctor Who. Now, I've got lots of Doctor Who stuff, so if any of you wants to buy me a present, get me some Big Bang Theory stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed Series 12, which is currently up to Episode 7. I suppose you're further ahead in America with Big Bang Theory, Episode 7. Yes. We're on. Yeah. Young Sheldon, we're probably up to Episode 7.
We just had the Young Sheldon crossover.
Oh, shut up. Stop spoiling things, Kirby. Naughty Kirby.
It's not. Everyone knew about it.
Well, I didn't.
Okay.
Come on,
okay.
Then.
And I bring good news.
Yeah.
You watched The Orville, right?
Oh, Adam? Yeah. Yes.
The new series of The Orville is going to start at the end of this month.
Ooh. We'll get it.
December 30th is what they're saying here. Ooh. I don't know when it'll start there. Good.
I'll probably be January, February time. Excellent. I just
hope it's on Fox Channel here.
Yeah, we get it. I think it's one of the Fox channels here. I can't remember which one. However, it's superb. Have you watched it all yet, by the way? Have anybody watched Orville yet, of you two? Because you were talking about watching it, weren't you?
I've only seen the first episode. I liked it. I need to find time.
We said that last time. Get on and watch it. Right then. Who won?
Stuff.
Yeah. Whowon.co.uk.
Whowon.co.uk?
Pirate Planet Book. Doctor Who Magazine 532. Marco Polo. Among the latest products you can buy now. Coming soon, and I don't know if they're going to be ready for Christmas, but the Entanglement, first Doctor story and Big Finish, and a story featuring what was the name of that character played by Maureen O'Brien? Vicky, that's it. Featuring Maureen O'Brien. I don't know how she's, because she's older now, so how you would get your voice to sound like your younger self. I find that
she does a very good job, actually.
Because I know that Louise Jameson does that, playing Leela.
Yeah, she does.
So it goes up a little bit of an octave, she says. I don't know if Tom Baker does that, because his voice has changed as well, hasn't it, really? I don't know if he raises an octave just to make himself sound a bit more doctory. I don't know, you could tell me. I haven't listened to an awful lot of Tom Baker on Big Finish.
Well, we've gotten used to him. You know, I mean, he started several years ago, so we've gotten used to how he sounds. But he still sounds very much like the guy, you know.
No, not
I've seen
doctor.
It now, but, I mean, and we've been watching the Fourth Doctor series on the Journey, and I'd say that there's not a lot of difference.
Yeah, good. That's what I like to hear. So there's loads of books and CDs and gifts available at whowon.co.uk. Get it in now, because you're going to run out of time for postage soon. And the same at Lavazzi, where I'm just going to check to see if the beautiful Lavazzi Christmas jumpers and hats are still available. Because if they're not, it's your own blimmin' fault. Because I've been plugging these on the 20MB.2 podcast Facebook group and on the show. And I typed in Lavazzi wrong. cost. So. That's why that with two hands. LeBonzi.co.uk. That'll work now. Yeah, let's have a look. Doctor Who, sweaters and jumpers. I think it's going to be available still. Not necessarily in my site. Yeah, it's still available. It's got one review on it. Guess who wrote that? Yeah, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's got it's black with stars and TARDISes and Daleks all over it. And it's perfect for your Doctor Who fan friend. But what I will say, I bought a 2XL one and it's quite snug on me. So get a size above the size you're actually aiming to get. Okay? You won't be disappointed. It's very, very comfy and beautiful quality. So there you go. Among them, of course, if you want to definitely buy your Doctor Who fan a scarf, it's winter here in Great Britain. So, and it's going to be winter in 6 months' time in Australia. So why not do that? It would be silly not to. Wouldn't it, Kirby? Okay.
Right.
Get a Doctor Who scarf for your Doctor Who fan loved one.
Why don't you get a Doctor Who scarf for your family? I'm sorry, my wife texted me. I was reading it.
Oh, glad you're paying attention. Yes, I think you should buy Mary one for Christmas. What do you think, Mary?
Oh, that'd be lovely. Mm.
And finally, on the thread that's coming through on YouTube, we have Alan T. Butcher saying, I believe you missed the Punjab. I've done that one. Let's move down a bit. Joshua Dybal said, nice gibbon. Alan T. Butcher said, sea full of laughs. And then Laurie Nick said, wow, Mandrill hasn't graced up the cover of a magazine since 1973. And then she says, did Adam just say Macra Terra? Macra Terra. That's what I said. And then she'd put a little emoji with cool
instead
face.
Of terror.
Alan T. Butcher, there's no such thing as Macra Terra. And Lolian Robin says, yes, he did pronounce it that way. It's the Macra Terra. Macra Terra. Sorry, that's how it is.
No, you're going Terra. Terra. It's terror.
It's not terror. It's terror. That's how you spell the word, pronounce the word terror. It's terror. Shut up.
Terror. It does not end in an A.
Right, I'm going to go on to Google.
It doesn't end in an A.
Be quiet. I'm going to ask terror. Google how you're supposed to pronounce terror. Right then.
Terror.
Terror. Terror. Pronounce. Yeah, here we are. Ow, this is not what I want. Oh, that's how you... That says terrier. I know how to pronounce terrier. Ah, no, it's terrorist. I forgot it. Ah, this might work.
That's Alexa.
How to pronounce terror. And that's too long.
So do you say terrorist?
Terrorist.
It's terrorist.
Terrorist.
But you say terror.
Terror. There we go. There we go. Shush.
Terror.
That's the that's from an American blimmin' person. No. Hang on. We invented English, not the Americans. Right, that's stupid. How dare they? No, it doesn't say it. Why do Americans pronounce schedule differently to the British? Schedule. How do Americans? Oh, schedule.
Schedule. Do you say Schule or where the
schedule.
Kids go to learn
schedule.
Things?
It's a German word, isn't it? S-C-H-E. Sche. That's how I pronounce it. The Germans would pronounce S-C-H. Sche. As in school. Oh, yeah, that's what you mean.
Schule. You'd say schedule, so I don't know.
Schedule.
There's another word schedule. That I've noticed. You guys seem to have two different ways of pronouncing it. I'm trying to remember what it is.
I think schedule and schedule, I think I'll say it depending on the circumstances. I haven't really considered it, actually. Well done. See, this is a good subject, this. And you have mocked me earlier on.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. Hang on, terror. Oh, yeah, this is the English Oxford English Dictionary. How do you pronounce the word terror?
Well, there you go.
Listen. The Oxford English, remember, English was created in this country. And this is how you pronounce terror, as according to the Oxford English Dictionary. Listen.
Terror.
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 Terror. Thank you. I win that one.
No, you don't.
You keep saying Terra.
Listen. She's saying Terra. She's not saying Terra.
Terra. You keep saying Terra.
Just listen. Listen very carefully. Listen very carefully.
Terra.
There we go.
I hear Terra.
There's no R at the end of it. It's Terra.
Terra.
Thank you. I rest my case.
I hear Terra.
He's going to deny it.
Well, it's quite clear. You can't miss it. They'll do it again.
Terror.
Yes.
You're not listening properly. You're not. You're choosing to listen to hear it incorrectly. It's quite hearing.
Tomato.
No, there used to be a way, you know, a phonetic way, didn't they? They show the phonetic way. Actually, I'll put it in phonetic.
You have defective hearing.
No, I don't. Well, I do, actually, but I've got a bit of tinnitus, but that won't stop me from knowing how to pronounce a word correctly.
Oh, that's...
phonetic. Ah. There we go, let's see if this works.
Oh, this is fascinating, Doctor Who podcasting.
Yeah, well, it is, actually. It's topical. Thank you very much. How to pronounce horror? What? Oh, give up. I was right, anyway, because it was quite clearly. Let's see what the last people
Computer.
Are saying. What?
Computer.
See, even the computer doesn't understand what you're saying.
I pronounce that horror, but text-to-speech is always improving, and I might not have it quite right.
Alexa, how do you pronounce terror?
I pronounce that terror, but text-to-speech is always improving.
Thank you. Terror, yeah. Right. Thank you. Even Alexa knows how to bloody say it. Right then.
No.
Yes. Right then. Right, Joshua Dybul said, sounds a bit Norfolk that way. And then Alan T. Butcher said, but the American pronunciations are often older than current British pronunciations, which have changed more. Don't back them up, Alan. And Laurie Nick said, I pronounce it the same way you'd fit in New Jersey. New Jersey.
Adam. New Jersey, yeah.
It's terror. Right then. Anyway, so next week we won't record on the Sunday because I will be at the M&S Christmas party, as I alluded to before.
No quiz, because I can only give you an hour and a half.
I'm not going to do a quiz. Shut up, Kirby. And we'll be recording at probably 10 a.m. on the Monday. And then we'll be looking at the most recent episode, the title of which eludes me for the moment, but Kirby's just about to go up with it.
I don't remember.
Ooh, that's a first.
No, I'll find out. Hang on.
Oh. We'll just say the most recent episode, episode 10, shall we?
The Battle of Ranskor Ab Kalos?
Yes, that sounds about right, but it's quite a mouthful. Yeah, we're going to be looking at the Beast of Trenzalore. Yeah, the Battles of Trenzalore. Is that? I don't know, that was another Doctor, wasn't it? next Monday. So that's 8 days from now, Monday. And then after that, that'll be it.
8 days a week.
That'll be it for 2018. So we'll be saying Happy Christmas and all that malarkey, because we won't be recording again till the new year, when we will be looking at, obviously, the Revelations. Is it called Revelations? I can't remember that. Resolutions. Revelation of the Daleks. That was a Doctor Who story, wasn't it? early in the new year. I think it's New Year's Day is, in fact, on Tuesday. Is that right? Hello?
I don't know.
I think New Year's Day is on a Tuesday, so we therefore would record our review of that the Sunday after that. So we'd actually be closer to the
New
broadcast.
New Year's Day is a Tuesday.
I said that.
Confirming it.
Okay, right. So we'll record on the Sunday after that, talking about that episode, and then the following week we'll do a review of the whole series, and then we'll return to the journey. Aren't I nice to you lot?
That Sunday will be at the old time, right?
Yeah, the old time, 7 p.m.
10 o'clock for you, right?
7 p.m., yes. Yeah. Just a couple of things coming through. Alan T. Putcher said, isn't it Noi-Joyzy? Noi-Joyzy.
No, it's not
Joyzy,
it's Jersey.
But it says New Joyzy. Only if you live in New York. New Yorkers speak funny, don't they?
You either live in New York or you live in New Jersey.
But New Yorkers speak funny, don't they? New York. I think they say New York is York, isn't it?
New York.
Some American accents are really cute. Some of them are very annoying.
It's Boston, where you talk in the yacht.
But you don't say Boston, you say Baston.
Beg your pardon?
You keep in the yacht.
You got to say yacht.
He's back on the language. It's a family show. But yes, yeah, so apart from that, we'll be seeing you nearly next week, well, as in 8 days' time, and thank you for putting up with all these horrible American mispronunciations for the episode of the show. And we'll see you again next week. Goodbye!
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.